Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to a Monday, April 1st, 2024 edition here on the Chase Holmes Podcast. College football show. It is Monday, so you know what that means. Fellow University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green and myself talking all things college football on this edition. We talk about the 10 biggest transfer portal quarterback needle movers in this cycle. We also talk about a little bit Georgia UCLA in this week's edition of Matt Green's Dog Bites. But we really focus on the whether or not these quarterbacks are going to be needle movers at their programs this year. We talk about Cam Ward at Miami, who I'm really high on, DJU at Florida State, Adachiles at Michigan State, and why there's a lot of optimism for Michigan State and Jonathan Smith surprising some folks out of the gate in East Lansing. Dylan Gabriel, Will Howard, you know, the usual suspects there, Malik Murphy, Daquan Finn, who I really like at Baylor. So we talk about it all on this college football edition here on the program. As always, if you're a subscriber and longtime subscriber and love the college football show and all the other content that I do each and every day on this very feed, and you have not already done so, please, please, please make sure you hit that pause button right now and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or however you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show, and it helps this very show continue to grow. So if you could, please take a second and take care of that today. I would greatly appreciate it. You can also email the show, chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com, for any future mailbag questions, anything like that, to get in touch with Matt or myself each and every week on this college football program. You can do so, chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. You can also read me at the newsletter, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. I'm also the senior editor at TPL Tennessee. So if you're a Tennessee fan checking out today's show and you're not already, make sure you're a subscriber of the Players on Tennessee, where I'm writing every day and building that out. So TPL Tennessee, go check that out and subscribe today. And yeah, also, if you want to watch this show, you can do so on our YouTube page. We're nearing 2,000 subs, and yeah, it's growing each a little bit more each and every day. So youtube.com, like and subscribe, Chase Thomas Podcast. You'll find all the full episodes, clips, and all that good stuff there. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Everything School HQ down there in Dakila, Georgia. My good friend, Philly University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green is here. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is good to be back with you. You know, I know you say everything school, but was this a good weekend for the Volunteers?
Yeah, I think it was a good weekend. I mean, Tennessee got exactly where their seeding said they should have gotten to, which was the Elite Eight. They were a 2 seed in the region. They got they ran into a buzzsaw in Purdue. Zach Edey is defended is officiated in a very frustrating way.
Here we go.
But I mean, look, man, like Zakai, he ran out of gas late, playing a lot of minutes, and he's been critical for this team. Dalton Connect obviously was unbelievable, and this one hit so many big time shots. I mean, the team did all they could. I mean, they had a long run. I mean, it's just the thing I told the Thomas Family group chat, where it's like, I just don't know how you could be mad as a Tennessee fan at where you ultimately got to. Yeah, Alabama made the Final Four in their region, but that was also where Tennessee should have been. If they had ultimately taken care of business down the stretch, they would have been a one seed in that region. But North Carolina ultimately got it and got bounced earlier than Tennessee. But this tournament in particular, it's just, I think it's the hardest to win of all the major college sports. I don't know if you agree, but you want to be in it every year. You want to be strong. I mean, Rick Barnes got past the Sweet 16 here. It was his most talented team he's had to this point. We'll see how they handle the portal this offseason, where they are going into next year. Still a lot of young talent. I mean, JP Estrella, true freshman, four-star, he stepped up in a huge way in this game. He was awesome against Zach Edey. Tobe Awaka was great against him. He'll be back. I think, by and large, you just look, man, it's the NCAA tournament. NC State made the Final Four. No one had that. NC State wasn't even a tournament team if they don't win the ACC.
It was going to happen all along.
Did you? You were all on the pack before the tournament. You were just like, yeah, this feels like a Final Four run to me. It's just enjoy the ride. You want to get out of the... My big thing is, like, when you're a good everything school program, you should get out of opening weekend more often than not. And then as a fan, it's just like, whatever happens in the Sweet 16 on, you just let it happen. It's hard to win that many games in a row without a blemish. It's just, basketball is a weird sport, and I think it's the hardest tournament to win. So look, Tennessee made it to the Elite Eight. They had a strong showing. They pushed Purdue all game long, and they were right in it till the end. So I mean, look, Purdue's a really good team. I think they're going to be in the national title game against UConn. I had UConn to go back to back before on the bracket and all that. So I mean, it is what it is. It's okay. I mean, you got really far, and they had a really great season, and the program's in great shape going into next year.
Yeah, I think UConn Purdue, that's the matchup everyone needs to see at this point. But I have a trivia question for you, sir. Can you tell me what Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, LSU, Mississippi State, and South Carolina all have in common?
What context?
All of these are schools from the SEC that have made a Final Four. And there's one team I left out. I think that's the Tennessee Volunteers. How can we be an everything school? We never even made a Final Four. What is that?
Have you seen how many tournament wins Rick Barnes has at Tennessee? I think he leads all SEC active coaches during this run with SEC wins. Or conference tournament. Or, wow, NCAA tournament games. He's won a lot of tournament games.
They're pretty good at everything. There's something to be said for it. They're pretty good at everything, school.
I'm not going to take the slander at this hour. It's a good weekend. You're just deflecting from what was a huge bounce back weekend for Tennessee baseball after getting run rolled for the first time in program history on Friday night against the Dogs. And the Dogs are feeling good. A lot of Georgia fans yapping on Twitter.com. Friday night feeling good. The Braves won. The Dogs won in explosive fashion. They're like, what a weekend we have ahead of
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. I was hoping the Creighton Blue Jays could get it done, but they fell just short. That was a good game as well.
And then the inevitable happened. The Orange Crush and Tennessee. Because I had a buddy. I'm going to shout him out. Uncle Derek. He was quick to send me a tweet of Georgia going off on Tennessee Friday night, and I was like, let's just wait for the Georgia pitching staff. Let's just wait for the rest of the weekend. Tennessee plays really well at home. There's a reason they were 19-1 at home. Like, let's just see how the rest of the weekend plays. But I'm not worried. They're still gonna win the series. And then Tennessee proceeds to blast 17 runs, come back on Saturday when it looked like it was gonna get away from them again early.
That's right, because Saturday was looking like another blowout, and then they hit like multiple grand slams in that game.
Two grand slams in that game, and then Tennessee, and obviously they end today with a shutout. I think it was like 6-0 today, so Tennessee takes the series against the Dogs. But hey, it was a fun couple
America's
hours on
team,
Friday.
America's team, the Boilermakers, got it done, and they saved the rest of us from a Tennessee fans celebrating a Final Four run. So I think we can all celebrate Zach Edey and the gang tonight, right?
I will
kinda
say,
like, kind of like Larry Zonka and the group get together, you know, Mercury Morris, all those great Dolphins. Every time someone doesn't go undefeated, That's how, you know, once Tennessee was sent home, Georgia fans like, okay, you know, we're still playing basketball in the postseason here in Athens, Georgia. Maybe NIT champs. Who knows? We'll see what happens.
That's great. I love that. I love that for y'all. But I will say, friend of the pod, Logan Booker, he had a tweet that I couldn't help but just say, okay, I'll let Georgia fans get this off today. Vol fans cannot stand when first time since 1980 droughts come to a close. Another tough day for them. That was the first Purdue Final Four since 1980.
Okay, I wasn't following that one.
Yeah. Georgia, 1980. That ended not too long ago. 2 years ago.
That's true. It's a new era now without the 1980 stuff being thrown in there. It made me stronger, though. You know, it built character.
It did. I mean, hey, it added, you know, Red Sox fans. It meant more in the early 2000s. When
1998, like, we're getting there. It's not 1980, but it has been a while. And Georgia's also had some conference titles in there sprinkled in without any national titles. Tennessee's in that 98. That's still a conference title drought to this point. So we'll see.
What is this? What is the tacking on and just jumping all over Tennessee this weekend?
Hey,
you're feisty.
This is the monster you created. This is what you did. This is what you've done to me.
What am I supposed to do when we become America's college sports town? Like, I don't know. I don't make the rules that we're everything school and we're America's college sports city. Like, I don't make the rules. It's just how it happens. I go where America takes us, and America takes us to Knoxville, Tennessee. You know this.
No, I hear you. I think of the power brokers in the SEC, if you will, I think Tennessee is the only one that's droughts going back to the 19 something, right? Like, I mean, like
in terms
Florida,
of
2008 at this point is a long time ago. Cam Newton in 2010 Auburn, it's like that's a long time ago. But Tennessee's is the one that goes back, at least Oklahoma barely sneaks in there right there in 2000. But yeah, I mean, there's a few droughts out there in the SEC.
What a great trip down memory lane. Thanks for that, Matt Green. Well, sir, we have some dog bites before this episode. I thought it'd be fun that we could do, as we continue on our themed episode series, the Needle Mover series tonight for QB transfers. I have 10 on here that I thought would be fun to discuss from whether or not they will end up moving the needle for their program, because there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of quarterback movement, obviously, in the portal. And everyone gets excited because it's a new name, new face. And it's like, oh, shiny new toy. Like, he's going to be the savior. He's going to be our Joe Burrow. He's going to be our player X. And then.
So, you know, so what's the definition of that? How much it moves my needle?
Is that
a 1 to 10 score?
No, just how much do you think it's? I mean, honestly, when I think needle mover, like Hendon Hooker was a needle mover for Tennessee as a transfer to Virginia Tech. We didn't see it coming. But he was a needle mover. He was a program. He was a program changer. After his 2 years on Rocky Top. So, there are needle movers and there are not. You know. Basically, like when I think needle mover, I want you to think. At the end of this year, we'll come back and we'll revisit this, and you'll be like, "That was a big time needle mover." Like he, like
so
they were here.
Not a program changing player. Is he not a needle mover?
No, he's not.
Okay,
if he keeps the status quo. Yeah, if he's a status quo guy, then he's not a needle mover.
All right. I am glad I asked our parameters first, but we'll get to that. We want to start with the dog bites.
You do have some dog bites this week, sir.
So I have a dog bite, if you will. I don't know if you've seen that UCLA, Georgia, mm-hmm. home and home, 2025, 2026 is now in jeopardy. UCLA inherited this Big Ten schedule, and they're like, "Hold on, we're gonna add Georgia to this." I don't know. We need to reevaluate things. So, that's unfortunate. I don't think that was a needle mover, if you will. Georgia, UCLA, home and home by any means. But I think Georgia fans would have enjoyed going out to Cali for a game and reliving the Rose Bowl memories. But yeah, I think it's unfortunate in terms of Georgia set up a really good non-conference schedule, you know, in recent years, like a decade plus in advance. And, you know, you've seen the Oklahoma game go off the home and home schedule, them joining the SEC. Obviously, that messed up Texas that I think was going to be like 2026 and 27 or something like that. They will, obviously, they're going to play now in the conference, but you got Ohio State coming up 2030, 31, Clemson Clemson, Georgia plays, obviously they're going to play this upcoming year in 2024. Then they play in 29, 30, 32, and 33. And those are all the home and home games. Like these first two were Charlotte and now Atlanta in 2024. Like the next four are actually going to be home games. So get Georgia Clemson six times in 12 years. That's probably going to be messed up too. Clemson's, have they jumped on the lawsuit yet with the ACC? So they're probably going to end up in the SEC, and that's going to be canned as well. But, you know, then you're probably going to get Georgia Clemson more often. So it might be canceled like Oklahoma and Texas are canceled. Like you're still going to see those games played. But yeah, any thoughts you have about Georgia's future schedule, UCLA getting canceled?
I mean, it's just,
well, it's not canceled yet.
I just think it's so weird. Like we're going to keep seeing like Team X schedules Team X in 2027. I'm like, what are we doing? Why are we still like, as I guess you kind of have to just put something there as a placeholder, even though, you know, in your heart of hearts, like when we're talking about it, it's like Josh Brooks said on 929, his quote was, with the evolution of the Big Ten schedule and our schedule, we've got to make decisions that are best for us, and they've got to make decisions that are best for them. Everything is in play. We'll see. It's a fluid situation. I mean, what we're seeing is like, he's like, I don't know who's even in my conference potentially next year. I don't even know what kind of situation we're looking at. But it's also like, are you really like and this is no slight to UCLA. I think they're just going to go through a little bit of a rebuild. Deshaun Foster coming in. It's not like you're going up against Chip Kelly yet. We'll see how Deshaun works as a head coach. It's a big jump for him, but I like his staff that he's put together, and we'll see what it looks like for him at UCLA. But like, that's not a, like, the part of it to me where it's like, are you really worried about it in 2025? Like, are you really worried about going to the Rose Bowl where you're going to be a 3-touchdown favorite most likely? Like, all right. I would understand maybe a little bit more if the Notre Dame home and home came up next year, where you're like, if that was not 7-6 years ago, whatever it was now, that one I'd probably be like, do we really want Notre Dame as a home and home with what we've got in the docket with our home, with our schedule and everything else? But it's also like, you can lose games now. Like, we're going to be at a 14-team playoff potentially in 2 years. And it's like, I don't know. I have a lot of mixed thoughts on this. I just, like, with everything else in college football right now, I would just like some clarity because we don't to dance around.
What are you saying about the Notre Dame game, though?
I'm saying that, like,
Georgia
wouldn't
schedule them today?
Yeah, I think you would probably stay away from that one right now if you're Georgia in the modern, with their modern schedule.
Notre Dame hasn't gotten any better since they were when Georgia scheduled them originally. Like 2017, 2019, like those are some good Notre Dame years, like right in the mid 20 teens. Like they went to a couple college football playoffs. So like that was a good program they were facing.
Good program. I'm just saying, like, I think Marcus Freeman's recruiting at the best level that Notre Dame's ever recruited at the moment. So I don't know. I guess for me, I just look at it as like it's another top 10 matchup potentially for back to back years. I don't know. I would understand keeping that out of it.
I think that's the exact game Georgia's trying to schedule, to be honest, because I mean, you've seen it. I even left out, I think Florida State, Georgia plays in like 2027 and 28 or something like that. So they're trying to play these marquee games. Yeah, UCLA. I don't think that's going to like worry anybody. I think the unfortunate part is everyone that doesn't know the context, and you know, Twitter isn't a real place, so it's not the biggest deal, but like it becomes a narrative, you know, stuff comes out of social media, and Georgia, all the talk last year is how Georgia had the worst schedule ever. Oh, how can the number one team in the country have this bad of a schedule? And you look up at the end of it and Ole Miss and Tennessee, like it ended up being a pretty good schedule in the back half. And also that Oklahoma was supposed to be the second or third week of the season, and instead you had Ball State. So I think with this new SEC schedule, like you're probably not worried about anyone's schedule being easy. But if we see Georgia have to go play Central Michigan at a conference because of this, it's like, well, that's kind of a bummer. I would at least rather them play UCLA. Like they have Louisville coming up. I think NC State a few years, maybe like a decade out. So it's like those Power Five, whatever we're calling them now, those are at least still better than playing the cupcakes at a conference.
I just think we're going to continue to see the schedule evolve. And I think a lot of schools probably are just like, we don't know what's it, just because there's still so many unknowns and who's in your conference. What does the playoff look like? What are the automatic qualifiers look like? Like there's just so much gamesmanship and there's so many chess moves that these universities are having to think about, where it's like Tennessee fans are probably not over enthused about NC State as a neutral site and getting, I think, Syracuse next year. I think in Atlanta is where they, those two meet. And it's like, that's not a great matchup. But if you're Tennessee, you're like, well, we're going to be favored. It's an out of conference game. It's a quote unquote Power Five matchup. And
Tennessee, Syracuse is in Atlanta?
Yes.
Okay.
So I think it's like one of those where, okay, I can see the rationale for going down that rabbit hole when you don't know, and you don't know how many wins or how many losses that it that you'll have available to you to make the playoff. So I don't know. I think it's just gamesmanship in a lot of different universities right now.
As a side note, I hope there's some coordination among Syracuse and Tennessee fans. Like maybe Syracuse is rocking all Navy that week. Yeah. You know, like, so we're not seeing orange and just orange on orange, just like some of these terrible uniform matchups we've seen. So hopefully there's some coordination that maybe Tennessee busts out the gray or the black or something. Who knows? I think
I don't think they would do that. Like, I think they keep the black for midnight. I think black will always be a home game in October for Halloween.
And can black it out too.
Yeah. I don't think that'll happen. Smoky gray, I think, could happen. That wouldn't surprise me.
But I think ultimately this is going to lead to, we can make these schedules the year of. The portal's getting so crazy. Like, you know, Peyton Manning's in the league. Like, you're going to have that AFC South schedule they're playing, and oh, you're going to play the Giants because you're going to play your brother on Sunday Night Football, and we're going to play Tom Brady on Monday Night Football or something. Like, we're going to make sure we get those games in. So with how different the portal is great. SEC saw the ratings, I'm sure, of their schedule release back in 2020. Like, it would be a scheduled a TV event, getting like the marquee college football games released every year. So,
well, I mean, think about it. I love
the
that
transfers
idea.
Win, like, okay, now Miami's gonna play, you know, Washington or something, and what's his name's gonna play against a former rival.
Well, I think there's something to what you're saying too, like with the portal and everything else. Like, you just have now some grudge match potential where if you do year in year out for out of conference, I understand SEC conference, like that doesn't need to be affected. But it's like DJU makes the jump from Oregon State to Florida State. Let's do Florida State at Oregon State as a out-of-conference game and see how he does in his return. Like, you do stuff like that where I think it ramps up the intrigue.
Let Bo Nix play all Georgia sixth time in his career.
Exactly. Like, you just do, there's different things where you can amp it up, and I think it generates interest. Like, Kansas State, Ohio State would rock this year. Like, if you do that matchup, regardless of where it is, where it's just kind of one of those, like you said, like the Eli Payton, you just circle it. You're like, all right, we have to have that on the calendar. We have to have Payton playing the Colts, like in his first, like you have to do certain things where you're like, let's not overthink this. Let's play into our player movement and think about who the biggest movers are this cycle and then figure out how to have them play against their old team.
Yeah, it'll happen at some point when they just can't, or maybe we got mega conferences and then they'll just have everything scheduled out for the next decade or something. Who knows?
Who knows indeed. Well, speaking of transfer quarterbacks movements, this cycle here, Matt Green, we're going to get into our needle mover quarterback transfer series here in college football in 2024. I have 10 quarterbacks that I thought we could bounce back and forth between. Will Rogers to Washington, Cam Ward to Miami, DJU to Florida State, Will Howard to Ohio State, Dylan Gabriel to Oregon, Riley Leonard to Notre Dame, Malik Murphy to Duke, Aiden Chiles to Michigan State, Brock Vandegrift to Kentucky, and Daquan Finn to Baylor, who I really like and I'm excited to talk about for a little bit here. Matt Green, I'll let you bounce around here. I don't if you don't want to go up and down the list, who would you rather start? Needle mover, not a needle mover for you of these 10. Where do you want to go first?
Let's start with, I think, the biggest name of the offseason to most people, Cam Ward to Miami. Is Cam Ward a needle mover or not a needle mover?
He's absolutely a needle mover. I think he's almost the most sure thing needle mover in this cycle. He's going to be big. I think a lot of people are just scared to buy into Mario Cristobal all the way. They kind of want to see it. Some people need to jump on early because I'm going to be one of those people this summer where the preview series people are, I'm already getting prepared for the smart college football folks to be like, look, I like Cam Ward. I like what he did at Washington State, but it's just, I have to see it to believe it at Miami. And it's like, I think it's okay to just be like, I think Miami's going to be really good. I think Miami, even if you have questions about the offensive line, this, that, and the other, the ACC, not Florida State, I don't think it's going to be as strong. Obviously, Clemson's not the Clemson of old. Here's the thing about Cam Ward. He started 25 games. He's extremely durable at his career at Washington State. 6,963 passing yards, 48 touchdowns, only 16 interceptions. He also ran for 13. He completes 65%, really 66% of his passes. He was great at Washington State. He was a borderline Heisman type guy at times. And if he was on a better Washington State team, who knows where he ultimately finishes up in Heisman voting potentially one year. Miami was 24th in yards per attempt in college football last year. The offense was sneaky good. And I think people may have overlooked that because Miami lost in obviously the Georgia Tech crazy fashion. But Miami's offense was good by and large when healthy last year. The Cougs were 4th in passing offense last year. I just look at this situation. He's going to come in with better weapons. I understand the conference and level play. It's not like he's walking into the SEC or walking into the Big Ten here, Matt Green. He's played a lot of college football to this point. He's had success, whether it was Incarnate Ward, whether it was Wazoo. I just think he's such a high floor guy that getting him and then keeping him away from your rival, because that was the rumor all offseason, was Cam Ward was going to be the one-year stopgap at Florida State. After he left Washington State. Instead, he goes to Miami. And I'm buying all the Cam Ward stock. So I am going to say at the end of the year, we will look back and say Cam Ward was a huge needle mover for this quarterback cycle. I think he's going to be the biggest one. And I think it's going to end up being a difference between Miami making the college football playoff and winning the ACC this year.
I'm going to say Cam Ward is not a needle mover. I think Cam Ward is a good player. I don't want to be the team success is all about the quarterback guy. But part of me does worry that they went 7-6 in 2022 and 5-7 in 2023. Like, the Pac-12 was really good in 2023. It was probably better than most years in 2022. Like, you had like 5-10-win teams, I think, in the conference that year. Part of me worries that Cam Ward is a stats guy and he's not an actual elevate the program guy, you know, and time will tell. You know, maybe that Washington State team was really bad. I feel like they were just kind of middle of the road in the Pac-12. Part of what you said is true. Like, the ACC literally might be a weaker conference than the Pac-12 was a year ago. So yeah. It's kind of wide open. He might not have to be as good as he was a year ago. And they might be the most talented team in the conference this year. But I don't know. There's part of me, you're probably right. It's probably part of it is the crystal ball thing. Like, can I really trust Miami? But I don't know if Cam Ward is, like, I hate throwing out the winner thing, but part of me wonders if he can actually be by your definition, like a program changing guy, because at Miami, program changing is not coming in and winning and going 9-3 and maybe making the ACC championship or something. Like, program changing is like getting them back into title contention. And can they be like a top 10 team next year? I don't know. That remains to be seen. So I'm going to say he's not a needle mover in that sense.
What would you guess year 3 was for Mario Cristobal at Oregon?
Year 3, was that the year where they got upset late? They went like 11-2, 11-3?
12-2.
Is that Herbert's last year?
Yes. Went to the Rose Bowl. 12-2, year 3.
They were in the playoff contention. What, yeah. They like got blown out by like Arizona State or something like that, like late
that sounds
in the
right.
season.
Yeah.
Yeah, they and that's what I feel about Cristobal. It's like that was a team that was a playoff team, and he fumbled.
But in the new model, you make the playoff.
No, that's true. And Miami has been recruiting well the last few years. So they could be on their way. I'm still cautious to put too much faith in Cristobal.
Fair enough, Matt Green. Where do you want to go next?
You referenced it a second ago. So let's go to the rival. Let's go DJU at Florida State. Needle mover or not a needle mover?
Not a needle mover. Or I could, this might be a way of getting out of this a little bit. He might be a needle mover in the wrong way. And a needle mover in the program takes a step back. I look at it as a positive sense, the needle mover, and we think of it as a positive sense. I think he's going to have a rough year. I think Florida State's going to have a rough year. They're losing a lot of big-time talent. They were obviously really great in the portal. Depth was a concern last year. You saw in the Georgia game a lot of the depth or lack thereof showcased in that game against the Dogs, obviously in the Orange Bowl. I look at this, I still think, obviously, Florida State's in great shape. Mike Norvell's got this program rolling. I don't think DJU is going to be a big-time addition to Florida State. There's part of me, it's like, I think I would rather just roll with Brock Glenn if I'm a Florida State fan and just see what you've got there. He was not good at Oregon State. You had to watch these games last year, and we obviously saw what the last year was at Clemson. He's completing around 50% of his passes, Matt Green. He was not asked to do really a whole heck of a lot of anything. They ran the ball really well. Jonathan Smith's one of the best offensive minds in the sport. I think you're getting a downgrade. Like, Florida State quietly was not this like big time explosive offense, Matt Green. It wasn't like they were just killing teams with Jordan Travis and company. They were 30th in yards per play last year. I don't think this is like some juggernaut situation that he's walking into and he's just got to be the game manager of a Ferrari around him. I don't think that's going to be the case. So I am going to say definitely not a needle mover. And I think if you look at it, I think it's a 9-3, 8-4 type year for Florida State. I really do think there's going to be a step back if they go with DJU for the year, because I think he won a lot of games with a good team around him at Oregon State. They're obviously really hard to beat at home. He played for one of the best offensive minds in the sport. They protected him. He did not complete a high percentage of his passes. Not the most accurate guy. I just think he's going to struggle in this conference this year. I think going back to the ACC may have been a mistake for him. That's my guesstimation here. So I'm going to say needle mover in the wrong direction.
I like one thing you said in just terms of like he's not inheriting a Ferrari, because I do think DJU is not bad. Like, I'll say that. Like, he's one of those, like, I wouldn't die on the hill defending DJU, right? But I feel like he is a solid quarterback. I feel like he gives you a solid floor. And if you know, he took over Ohio State or something, like, I don't know that they couldn't win a national championship with him. Like, I know we saw what they had with Kyle McCord being a game manager a year ago. Like, I don't know that Kyle McCord is any better than DJU. And we know he's got some ability to like, get tough yards at times, too, because he's got such a big body. But Florida State is not that. Like, Florida State, I feel like he's going to have to be more of like what Jordan Travis was. And that team was way more loaded a year ago. And maybe Florida State's got some guys emerge that we don't know about yet. But in terms of just what he's expected to do, I think he's going to be expected to be more of a playmaker. And I don't know that he can do that. I don't know that he can really carry Florida State's offense. So I'm going to say not a needle mover, because I don't think it's going to be as negative as you're saying. I think they'll probably, Florida State should still be one of the better teams in the ACC. Maybe it's a 9-3, something like that next year, but I don't think it's going to be like, you know, the wheels fall off or anything.
He has gained a lot of weight. I saw he's at 255 for spring camp.
Wow.
Like 255. Big dude. 10-pound gain since he got to Florida State. DeAnton Lynn disciple on Twitter posted QBs who played at or over 250 pounds. Jared Lorenzen at 275, Jamarcus Russell at 266, Bruce Eugene, I don't even know who that is, at 260, and then Cam Newton at 250.
Wow, that's a solid list right there. Jamarcus Russell, he was a load. But yeah, I think all those guys have a different level of arm talent than DJU did. I don't know that. Where did that other guy, Eugene, where did he play?
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. Bruce Eugene. Because it's going to be interesting. I have no idea. And I was hoping you might have
heard
know.
Of that person.
Bruce Eugene Grambling.
Okay.
He played at Grambling.
What did that say about us?
Yeah, Grambling. when did he play there? 2004. Okay. So he's an
How
early...
big was he?
He was, it says here he's now 6 foot 283, but he played at 260.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know. So we'll see. That's another thing where it's like, okay, he's getting big. I would not
touchdown. They apparently called Bruce Eugene back in the day.
Yeah. There you go.
If you're a fat quarterback, you're going to have a good nickname.
You are going to have a good, I mean, look, we'll see what happens. A lot of family Florida State fans will see how things go on that front, but I don't know.
The Belldozer, right? That's yes. A 250 plus quarterback. He just ended up being a tight end, right? But yeah. Blake Bell, you're going to have a nickname, especially if you lean into it and get the celebration going.
What was Joe Tereshinski? He was getting up there. I feel like Joe T was a little big. Am I misremembering that?
No, he probably wasn't that big. He was, I don't know. I can look him up. I would say he's not bigger than like 220 or something. I think just kind of regular.
Maybe I was just younger and he looked bigger to me. He looked stocky. He looked bigger. I don't know. From what I recall, Fountain Bauta, probably pretty big dude size.
Fountain Bauta. Yeah, 6'3", 218 is what they list Tereshinski on the 2018 04 roster.
Okay. That's a fun one to spell. How many Georgia fans could spell Joe Tereshinski right the first time? That's how you know you're a real dog, if you can do that without looking.
It's pretty phonetic. I think we got three generations of Tereshinskis. I think they might most Georgia fans, I bet you could probably spell it. Okay. I mean, one of them, I think his dad or granddad is still there, right? Like a strength, somebody in medicine, I don't know, something like that. Nutrition.
Your team, sir. I don't know. Your team. You're the expert of the Joe T family. That. Where are we going next, sir?
Well, let's keep doing this organically. So we went DJU. So let's go to Oregon State, where DJU came from. Well, not Oregon State necessarily, where the people that came from Oregon State, you pronounce it Chilas?
Yeah, is it Chilas? Aiden Chilas? I think that's what it is, right?
I actually didn't know that. So Aiden Chilas, Jonathan Smith, both moved from Oregon State to Michigan State. This is an absolute needle mover, sir.
There you go.
For no other reason than I cannot really think of too many examples of a head coach, of a quarterback and a head coach moving together. Hmm. I thought of Shador Sanders going to Colorado. I thought of Caleb Williams going to USC along with Lincoln Riley. And not putting Shador Sanders on Heisman Trophy winners level, but both of those have been a huge success. And I would say they were both needle movers for their new destination. And Jonathan Smith, I think, is one of the best like young coaches in the game right now. And it just feels like if he knows, like we obviously have a limited sample size of what Chilas did at Oregon State, but it feels like he knows it's like a known commodity for this guy. Mm. And he's bringing him with him to Michigan State. I think that just speaks volumes to me that he's going to be the guy at Michigan State immediately.
I love that comparison of like, it usually works, especially with offensive minds, like the Lincoln Riley stuff. If they're going to bring you and they're going to make it a priority to bring you along and they want you to come follow them to their next school, that's a good place to be. It's like, I mean, you didn't throw out Michael Penix, but like Kalen DeBoer coached him at Indiana. So he knew what he had in Michael Penix. Go. So that obviously, like offensive minded guys, when they know what they have with somebody, the proof is in the pudding there a little bit. So I do think that's a big one. He hasn't played a lot of football, obviously, because he was behind DJU this past year. But he was the highest rated recruit, quarterback recruit in Oregon State history when he came in. So that was a big get for Jonathan Smith when he took that job. But it's also like I think year one, and this is something that Hendon Hooker obviously burst on the scene a little bit with Heupel. But when you're in year one at some of these stops, you have an opportunity where Big Ten schools, I think they don't have a lot of stuff on Jonathan Smith's style. It's going to be a little bit of he's going to sneak up on some teams. He's going to have an opportunity to just kind of, hey, y'all don't have high expectations for what we're doing. You didn't watch my games at Oregon State last year. The players in the Big Ten might not respect Michigan State going into the year. And then I think Jonathan Smith is going to catch some eyeballs because I do think his offense is going to perform really well in East Lansing. And I think it was one of the better hires of this cycle and one of the easiest ways to build some momentum. Like, I'm not saying Michigan State's going to the playoff year one with Aiden, but I do think he's a needle mover in the sense that, like, it's been really rough for Michigan State the last few years now, Matt Green. And Aiden brings all kinds of confidence here. And Chris Olari, who covers him and has been on this podcast, he said, quote, Michigan State football quarterback Aiden Chiles already showing swagger in California cool early here in spring practice. 247. I was going through like some of these guys 247 profiles when they were coming out of high school, especially the older guys, see like how much things have changed and this, that, and the other. But they had put Chiles put up big numbers as a senior and can stress a defense with his arm and legs. He has an easy delivery and the ball jumps out of his hand. So it's a different kind of quarterback than what we've seen at Michigan State too. There's so many, what, Connor Cooks, the Kirk Cousins, the Jeff Smoker over the years. So I think there's going to be some fun aspect to.
Hey, you put some respect on Michigan. They're low key quarterback. You, man, they had like a decade plus straight of every quarterback they had going pro. Like
true.
The Drew Stantons, the Connor yeah. Cooks, Kirk Cousins, like you said, like they low key had a bunch.
Yeah. And I just think Jonathan Smith is going to coach him up, and I think he's going to burst on the scene. I think he's going to catch a lot of people by surprise, because I don't think a lot of guys are going to circle Michigan State early on their schedule of like, this is going to be, we got to be up for this game and defenses are going to be ready to go. They're going to be dialed in. But I think Aiden and Jonathan are going to put them on notice and surprise some folks. I would buy a lot of Michigan State Aiden Chiles stock going into this year. So I would agree with you, sir. Needle mover indeed.
Last 6 years, Michigan State has lost six or more games four times. And one of them they didn't was COVID when they went 2-5. And so that would have been an even worse year. So other than that 1 year, 2021, where they pop up and went 11-2, yeah, it's been a bad going on over a half decade, or yeah, almost going on a decade now for Michigan State.
Where do you want to go next, sir?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's see. I don't have a logical, let's see. Yeah. Well, oh yeah. Last thing I'll say, you know what Oregon State's on like third, fourth game of the season, they do play Oregon. So we're going to see that one earlier in the season next year. So I'm going to be excited for that. But, keeping it moving. Let's stay at Oregon. Dylan Gabriel going from Oklahoma to the Oregon Ducks. This is a tougher one because obviously this program, it's going to take a lot to move the needle for what Oregon is. So is Dylan Gabriel a needle mover?
No, he's not. I'm seeing some Heisman buzz for Dylan Gabriel out of the gate. I'm seeing some Oregon playoff potential national champion. They're going to be in the blue chip ratio, I think. For this group, big year three for Dan Lanning. I think they're going to be in the playoff. I think they're going to be a good team. I wouldn't be surprised if they win the Big Ten. Dylan Gabriel obviously beat Texas last year. He had a good year at Oklahoma, obviously was good at UCF as well. But in terms of needle mover, I don't think so. Like, Bo Nix was really good. I don't think he's being better than, like, me personally, I don't think he's going to be better than Bo Nix was last year. Bo Nix was unbelievably efficient. Oregon, I think, had the number one passing offense in college football this past year. So I don't think Dylan Gabriel is going to be better than that. That's a really high bar to pass. We'll see if he can stay healthy in this Big Ten conference and the Big Ten schedule that he's going to be up against in some of those Big Ten defenses with how much he runs around, his frame, this, that, and the other. I don't know. I think Dylan Gabriel's solid. He's a good stopgap. I like him more than DJU as a transfer quarterback. Like, I think that would have been better for Florida State, is Dylan Gabriel finding his way back to the state of Florida. And that one, I'd probably be a lot more optimistic about Florida State at that point. But I don't know. I don't think he's an angle mover, because I think you're getting worse quarterback play than what you had a year ago with Bo Nix. And I think what might happen, though, is because the team around him is better. And he's more dynamic. I think he's going to do more off-platform stuff. I think he's going to be a little bit more, because Bo Nix excelled at just doing exactly what he needed to do. He put the ball like side to side, put the ball where it needed to go, so his playmakers like Franklin could do stuff in space. And it was good, but he was also extremely efficient. And I don't know if he's going to be able to match Bo Nix's efficiency in Eugene this year. So needle mover, no, but I also just think Oregon's going to be one of the best teams in college football this year. I just don't think it's going to be because Dylan Gabriel raised the quarterback bar.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think Bo Nix, I think, is part of this conversation, because I think there's a lot of people out there that are like, well, Bo Nix was garbage at Auburn, and then he comes to Oregon and he balls out. So Dylan Gabriel is someone who's been pretty good. Like, I would say Dylan Gabriel pre-Oregon is probably a better college football player than Bo Nix pre-Oregon. So, you know, there's reason to think, yeah, he'll come here and be even better. But I feel like Bo Nix was always kind of undervalued a little bit at Auburn, and he was getting kind of a, you know, a shit show at times, for lack of a better term. And I think Bo Nix actually kind of was a good, super talented player the whole time, because like Dylan Gabriel might do more of the improvisation stuff, but I mean, Bo Nix is about as good of an athlete at the quarterback position in college football. Like, so I think you're not necessarily getting a better athlete. Like, maybe he's, and you're probably not going to be more efficient than Bo Nix, but I mean, maybe in Oregon's system, he kind of picks up right where they left off. So in that sense, he can't be a needle mover if they just pick up right where they left off. But I think there's a chance they do have more team success. Like you're saying, like, Oregon has not been to the made it back to the 14 playoff after that very first year with Marcus Mariota. So if this team gets back in the Final Four, who knows, maybe gets the national championship, like wins a national championship. Like, it's like a Stetson Bennett thing. Like, is he the greatest quarterback to ever play at Georgia? Like, I don't know. It's a conversation, but if he won that ring, that's moving the needle. So that's basically where it is for Dylan Gabriel. It's like, you get them in the Final Four, national championship type stuff, then he's definitely moving the needle for Oregon. But right now for me, I think I'm with you. I'd have to say he's not a needle mover, but he could just come in into their team and have a, you know, just kind of pick up right where they left off.
There you go. Where do you want to go next, sir?
Let's see. Let me segue here. We were talking about Stetson. So let's go to another former Georgia quarterback. Let's go to Brock Vandegrift. That's transferring to the Kentucky Wildcats. Is Brock Vandegrift a needle mover?
I am like, look, it's not that I'm excited to see Kentucky win games. I'm not saying that. I'm like all dialed in on the Kentucky 2024 Wildcats here, their football program, and what they look like week over week. But Matt Green, I am really, really fascinated by this, because this is uncharted waters. Like, Will Levis was a good player for them, more so in year one than year two, but a lot of that's just, there's different circumstances, different OCs, Liam Connolly's, we don't have to relitigate that. But we've never seen a player of this caliber, like raw potential, under center. In the Mark Stoops era, he's obviously a high floor guy, has over exceeded his expectations and what you can do at Kentucky. He's one of the best coaches in college football. That being said, Liam Cohen, who comes in, comes back from the Rams and the NFL to be the OC this year, is gone once again. So he's now back in the NFL as the OC for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They bring in Boise State's offensive coordinator to replace him, and Brock Vandegrift offseason comments seem pretty positive about him, and he obviously could have left but did not, so that's good they were able to keep him. Bush Hamden is his name. But it's funny, like, recent, like, nostalgia is a funny thing, because, like, I think if I had asked you, like, that 2021 Kentucky team, right, like when everything was firing in all cylinders of Will Levis before the injury riddled season and everything else where things kind of went sideways for the Kentucky, what would you guess their passing offense was with Will Levis that first year?
I mean, it wasn't great.
I think it felt like it was great at the time because you're like, oh, Will Levis has arm talent and Kentucky's throwing the ball around a little bit. Like, this is kind of fun. Well, Matt Green, they were 71st that year, or 73rd in passing offense. Boise State in 2023, where Hamden comes over from, they were 67th in passing offense this past year. It's hard for me to say because I think there's always going to be a cap on what a quarterback can do with the way Mark Stoops wants to play. It's kind of like Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, where I think you can get solid quarterback play. You can bring in quarterback talent who's going to play in the NFL. Like, you have a CJ Beathard. You have guys who, I mean, obviously can play at the NFL level for years that can come through the program and win a lot of games and elevate them to a degree. But I don't know how much Brock is going to be allowed to cook here. I don't know how much they're going to evolve and how explosive this group is going to be allowed, because I don't know. They're a huge unknown to me. So I've gone back and forth on whether or not he's a needle mover, because I think he could be. I just don't know if he's going to be allowed to be a potential needle mover at Kentucky, or if they want that to be part of the game plan.
Well, as part of your premise, are you implying that Kentucky held Will Levis back?
I think it's not even held back because they win games. Like, I think, and this is how it should be. Like, it's all about winning games, right? Like, it's all that, like, ultimately it's about winning games, and they're Kentucky. You have to be a little bit different in how you build a program, how you win. They are tough, great defense year over year. They win games running the football and being a physical team. That being said, I don't think Stoops wants Will Levis to throw the ball around. You saw in the Titans game, or in the Titans this season. I mean, he was throwing bombs against the Falcons this past fall in his debut, and he looked good. Like, he was airing it out. He was doing stuff that you just didn't see him really do at Kentucky. So, yeah, I think, not that he was, like, held back, but I think there were some limited, like, obviously, if he was in Heupel's scheme or he was in Georgia's scheme, I think Will Levis maybe looked at as a little different.
If Will Levis becomes a good NFL player, then I mean, yeah, maybe there's some conversation to be had. I always just kind of felt like, you know, we always kind of compared him to Anthony Richardson. Like, we see the tools and stuff he has, but he didn't ever seem like a good quarterback to me at the college level. Like, it was just kind of the potential that he could be a good quarterback. So I don't know if starting from that premise, if, like, you know, Kentucky's kind of stunning the development of maybe of their quarterback type of thing. I think most of us were really excited about what Brock Vandergriff could potentially do in a Liam Cohen offense. Mm. So now that we're not getting that, it's like, well, now I don't really know what to expect exactly. If he wasn't a former five-star, would we care at all about Brock Vandergriff? Like, you know, we saw him come into Georgia games, like, you know, in garbage time and run a lot. So I think that's, you kind of assume a guy who's a top 10, top 15 player coming out of high school that he can pass. So if you're seeing a guy that every time he comes in, it's like designed runs, I think you just kind of have a perception like, this guy's a dynamic athlete. He probably has the ability to pass. We don't actually know. We haven't actually seen him do it. So I think there's a chance he could be a needle mover, but like when we're having that conversation, like, by your definition, like, is Kentucky about to win anything with Brock Vandergriff in 2024? Like, this team wins 7-8 games. Like, that's cool. Vandergriff could be a difference maker and potential has some potential to be a quarterback at the next level. But right now I'd have to say, I can't move the needle for him.
Also, I think I agree.
Transfer from Georgia. Would there be, you know, any expectation as well?
I think so too, but I think if I'm a Kentucky fan, I'm really excited because this is like a huge, huge deal. I think Brock could be a huge deal. Wouldn't surprise me though in the slightest if he's not. So I'm still going to hedge based on what I've seen from Stoops in the Kentucky era at quarterback. So I'm going to hedge and say he's not a needle mover, but I think he has the best shot of any quarterback who's come in during this era of being a needle mover at UK. Where are we going next, Matt Green?
Let's go with another former SEC quarterback. Let's go back up to the Pacific Northwest in the Big Ten. Will Rogers to Washington. Is he a needle mover at all? A team coming off a national championship appearance.
I think it's the opposite way. I like Will. He seems like a really good kid. It didn't end well for multiple reasons. I would encourage folks to read up on what happened in that 1 year run for Zach Arnett and that group and Will Rogers. There's a lot of good reporting on that. But look, I don't know. Like, he was so efficient with those peak Mike Leach teams. And I mean, his numbers are crazy, Matt Green. 12,315 yards, 94 touchdowns, only 28 picks. Like, his career numbers in Starkville are pretty preposterous. Like, the dude was really good at running that scheme. He's not running that scheme in Arizona. And we saw last year when he's not running
Washington.
You
said Arizona.
Oh, I meant Arizona. Like, they're running the Arizona scheme at Washington now with Jed Fish and company. So I think the team's going to be good. I mean, Belichick is the DC over there, which is pretty wild. Steve Belichick is the Washington DC, which is cool.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, which is going to be a little weird. But look, I think you're coming off an all-time great season where you're putting all of your receivers, the top three, all gone in the NFL. You lose, obviously, Michael Penix. You lose the coaching staff. I think Jed Fish will be okay, like we talked about. I don't think there's going to be a big drop-off, and I think he's kind of probably are underrated just a bit. But I don't think he's a needle mover, and I think he was, like, Will Rogers is, I think, has shown he is really, really efficient in a particular scheme. Like, I think he'd be really good as a one-year blip in Heupel or at Oklahoma. Like, I think he could be really good at Oklahoma for a year. I don't think this is a good fit. So when he took his name out of the portal and withdrew from Washington after Kalen DeBoer left, I was kind of surprised because I don't think it's a good fit to round out his college career. So I don't think it's actually, I'm rooting for him up there at Washington, but I don't think it goes well this final year for Will Rogers at Washington.
Yeah, because he made that decision before DeBoer left, right?
Yeah, no, he did, but he also entered the portal after he left and then withdrew from the portal.
Yeah,
so I guess something changed and somebody convinced him, he thought about it and decided to stay, but what have you, but he withdrew from the portal after DeBoer left.
Is it possible for a guy to be the SEC's all-time leader in passing yards and feel like he's not even a good player? Like, I really don't even know that Will Rogers is good at all. Like, I don't know that
I think he's good at a certain style, right? Can you say he's just really good at a certain scheme?
I guess. I feel like so much of it is like, it felt like hollow numbers to me, to be honest.
He diced up the Dogs, I recall, right? And Starkville didn't he have a really good game? Which game did he have?
It was the game, I think freshman year, where JT Daniels, it was like one of the first games JT Daniels started in 2020 in Athens.
Okay. He had a big game against Georgia, I remember.
Yeah, but I think, I think he did, but I don't think he's like, for the most part, especially since Mike Leach, you know, not playing in Mike Leach's system, like it's completely different. We've seen a lot of guys have success in the air raid, and I don't know. I'm not a believer in Will Rogers at all. I think you're probably right. Like, this is the needle moving the opposite direction. I don't know if Will Rogers is the reason he's obviously not the reason the Washington's going to be worse next year. But he's not gonna make them any better than they were going to be, in my opinion.
No, I don't think so either. But I'm rooting for him. I hope it works out for him at UW. Where are we going next, Matt Green?
Let's go to Will Howard. Go on to transfer to Ohio State. Like, Ohio State's obviously right there with Georgia, and in terms of the betting favorites to win the national championship next year. They're going all in on the NIL and the portal. It feels like a guy taking over a Ferrari and he just has to keep that thing on the track. And so what do you say? Will Howard, is he a needle mover or not?
So here's the weird thing about this too. If you remove last year, the Kyle McCord blip, then I would say no question he's not a needle mover in Columbus, because we've seen just dude after dude, Fields, Stroud, what have you, like, no, I don't think his upside's that high. So I would say no, not a needle mover. However, you have to take into account what we saw last year in Columbus, which was not a great offense and one of the weirder offensive seasons we've seen. Part of that was offensive line play. We can break that down. But like Marvin Harrison and company, it just didn't feel like an electric offense when you had so many playmakers both in the backfield and out wide that you were just like, man, I think we talked about in the program throughout the year where it's like, if they just had some average quarterback play, like a Will Howard last year, do they beat Michigan? Do they still find their way into the playoffs?
No, I think they were getting average QB play.
Yeah, well, I'm saying above average. If you're getting top 20 quarterback play, which is what Will Howard can be in the sport, I think Will Howard can be comfortably in that top 20 quarterback conversation. So if I look at it just from through that lens, then I say yes, he's a needle mover, because I think there is no chance that he is worse than what we saw last year with Ohio State. However, part of the reason I think you bring in Will Howard is because you kind of don't want, you don't want to be in a situation where you need him to be a needle mover. Does that make sense? Where you have Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson now in the backfield, you have five-star receivers, you have guys still out wide that he can hit and this, that, and the other. The goal, this is going to be a run the football team. This is going to be like a style where it's like, Will, just, you're a vet, like keep this thing humming. Like Kirk Cousins in Atlanta, you're coming in here, like we have Kyle Pitts, we have Drake London, we have Bijan Robinson. Just like do what we need to do. Like we brought in Chip Kelly to be the new OC. Let Chip guide you. He's going to like just do what he tells you. And our offense is going to be really good and really hard to beat. So I think part of the appeal there is that he's not a needle mover, but he just, in terms of last year with McCord, yes. But in terms of like what we've seen from Ohio State quarterbacks in the past and like he's going to elevate them and be a Heisman finalist, I don't think so. But I also just don't think that's what Ohio State wants. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he doesn't have to be Dwayne Haskins, Justin Fields, CJ Stroud. I mean, even JT Barrett for that matter. Like he just has to come in and I mean, if he moves the needle, if he gets that back on track to what they were previously doing. I know what you're saying there. I think when sneaky, like you love to say, Ohio, it's been a sneaky long time since Ohio State's won a national championship. Like 2014 for a program who's like, you know, top consistently year in, year out, top two or three program in this sport. We're getting on a decade since this program's won a national championship. So I think the ultimate needle mover for Ohio State is winning the national championship. And I think with Will Howard, this team definitely has the ability to win a national championship. Because, I mean, you're talking, they have a loaded backfield with Travion Henderson and, I've just blanked on it from Ole Miss.
Quinshon Judkins.
They're not going to be some run first team. JJ Smith, like this guy could come in and be like the best receiver in college football.
Well, that's the other part. Jeremiah Smith, Igbuka is back.
They're going to be loaded.
Oh, Carnell Tate, five-star guy that Tennessee was down to. So yeah.
And where did the dude transfer, the former five-star Fleming? Did he go to Penn State?
Yeah, he's at Penn State.
Okay. And he wasn't necessarily what he was advertised to be. So I don't even know that he was that true, like first round guy or anything. He was a solid receiver. But Ohio State's going to have dudes at wide receiver. And so like they're going to still be dynamic offensively. And Will Howard, he's got that, maybe not the Justin Fields running ability, but he's got the make keep defenses honest with his legs type of running ability as well.
I agree. Couple more left here, Matt Green. Where do you want to go next?
You want to go leaving the team, the guy who came to Duke or the guy who left Duke? Who do you want to start with?
Let's go with the guy who left Duke.
Okay, let's go with Riley Leonard at Notre Dame now. Is he a needle mover?
He's hurt. He's going to miss, I think, a lot of spring. If I recall seeing like some Riley Leonard, he's beat up last year, obviously. He's not the most he's not injury free. Like he's not someone that I'm like penciling in for 16 starts, including playoff appearances for Notre Dame. That if I'm a Notre Dame fan right now, I feel great. Like you bring in CJ Carr, he's a big time recruit. Like you're excited about him potentially next year. But I think initially my gut was yes. Like DJ or Riley Leonard is a needle mover where it's like, hey, we've seen what Notre Dame can be with like an Ian Book type. And a lot of talent around them, a top 10 defense, great offensive line play, obviously, great tight end play. They should be able, there's just a high floor with Notre Dame in those type of years. However, I don't know. For me, I think no. I don't think he was that great. I think that Duke offense was okay with Riley Leonard, even when he was healthy. But like Duke was 112th in passing offense last year. I think he's won games. I think part of it, he's getting some credit for Mike Elko being a very good coach at Duke and kind of turning that program around. But Duke also being a defense first team, they ran the ball well. I'm going to say no. I think my early feeling was like, oh, Riley Leonard, big deal. Like, I think he's a winner. Like, this should be good. I don't know. Like, I think for me, I lean more he's not a needle mover. And I think Notre Dame fans might be a little bit disappointed about what he ultimately turns out to be in South Bend this year.
Well, there's two conversations to be had. Like, I think he absolutely is a needle mover, but if he stays healthy is a huge question mark because of the way he played. You know, he is a legit dual threat, and he's had his injuries here and there. I think you're right. I think part of it is Duke is being judged kind of at a different lens. It's like, look at what the quarterback Duke is doing. Like, it's like you don't have to be a superstar to be moving the needle at Duke. So I think he's dynamic. Like you were talking about Ian Book. That's where I was about to go with it. Like, they made two college football playoffs with Ian Book at quarterback. And, you know, no disrespect to Ian Book, he was not great. Like, he was solid. I think Riley Leonard at his best is absolutely better than Ian Book. And that's the best quarterback they've had in the last decade, right? Like, Ian Book was just like a good player. He could move a little bit. Like, he could make some plays, take care of the football. But he just kind of kept things on schedule. Like, Riley Leonard is going to be the guy that's actually like the playmaker in the offense, I think. And we haven't seen Notre Dame really have a quarterback like that. Like, they have like kind of the same type template quarterback there in the early years of Brian Kelly. Like the guys that were kind of game managers with the dual threats, like the Brandon Wimbush type players, you know, like I'm blanking on some of those other guys, it felt like they had the same type of quarterback.
Malik Zaire.
Yeah, just kind of average quarterbacks that were athletic. And Ian Book kind of felt he kind of fit that too. Just kind of average athletic. He was just a solid. You know, he had a moxie. You know, you give him those kind of qualities. But he was just a fine quarterback. So I think Riley Leonard actually has like some star potential to like, he's a guy that could get Notre Dame potentially doing that to the next level. And I think without a doubt he is a potential needle mover, but can you bet on him? That's where I'm not 100% sure.
Can you win the independent with Riley Leonard? I mean, you got Army, UConn, UMass here, like kind of a loaded league this year. I don't know if he can be that guy. But it's also like, you look at Sam Hartman last year, his numbers weren't bad. He had the exact same quarterback rating he had his last year at Wake Forest. He actually had a higher yards per attempt at 8.9 than the year prior. He threw less picks than at any point. He had his best completion percentage he's ever had at 63%. I mean, are we sure he's better than Sam Hartman? I think people just forgot that Sam Hartman was not bad.
I honestly forgot about Sam Hartman. Yeah, Sam Hartman was solid last year for sure. I don't know that he's better than
Sam. Chance that Riley Leonard's not better than him.
No, I think that's definitely fair. I think they could be looking at another 10-3 type season, but you know, maybe it's now judged differently because they finished ranked 9th or 11th and they're in the college football playoff, and who knows what can happen from there. But yeah, I think Sam Hartman is a good call because I don't know that he's better than Sam Hartman. But a different type of player, and sometimes that the guy that can make more plays with his legs at the college level can be the X factor.
I think so. So we'll see. But let's flip then to the player that will be replacing Riley Leonard at Duke, right? Malik Murphy. What do you think about Malik Murphy, Matt Green?
I mean, it's hard to know about Malik Murphy, like in just such a small sample size. I definitely wouldn't call him a needle mover because we're talking about Riley Leonard and what Duke has been the last couple years. So it feels like Duke's actually been raised up to like we were talking last year, like 7.5 over under win total, like preseason, like actually giving him like a respectable number. Like Duke is actually, you know, kind of elevated where they are as a program. So, you know, maybe Malik Murphy keeps it going and they're competing for the ACC title next year. Like, yeah, that would be massive, but I can't call him a needle mover as of now.
I think it's funny. Like, I was reading his high school stuff, and Malik's gigantic. Like, every picture of Malik Murphy is just like the dude. I mean, the guy is built like just an army tank. Like, he is a strong, large human being, and he showed out. Like, he kept Texas's college football playoff hopes alive by how he played, stepping in for an injured Quinn Ewers. And what we saw, I think, was solid. Not a huge sample to be like, yeah, definitively he's going to be good at Duke. But like, I was looking at, and I was thinking about this list, and I was like, I think he's actually the biggest unknown to me, the 10 that we had here. And I think there's a lot of boom or bust potential. We'll see. I think I'd probably feel better about Malik Murphy if Mike Elko was still the coach. Like, Manny Diaz is okay. I think it's a step down. I think Manny Diaz is an elite defensive coordinator in the sport. I don't know with the Miami stuff. He was okay. I think people have done some revisionist history about how he actually was at Miami. I think he was pretty solid. I think there's different circumstances on that one, but I don't think Miami, that was a disaster for Manny Diaz in Miami. The way people seem to remember and reflect on that one, I think he was fine there and could have gotten longer, and who knows what happens. Good recruiter, this, that, and the other. Duke's already a hard job. We know that based on whenever David Cutcliffe or Mike Elko was not the head coach, that things are not good at Duke, or Steve Spurrier way back in the day. It's a tough job. It's not for everybody. We'll see if it's for Manny Diaz. Tell me if this reminds you of anybody. Physically gifted signal caller with a lot of tools, strong arm, needs reps.
Probably a lot of people. I don't know who you have in mind.
I was just thinking about Joe a little bit, like how we looked at Joe Milton and like,
oh, that is one of the people that came to mind when you said that.
Like, there's just something about it. I mean, obviously this like huge frames. It's not an exact comp. This thing, strong arm. Malik has a strong, like, needs some more reps to really see what we have here. The mystery box of like, hey, Joe Milton could have a Heisman type year. He could also not have that type of year. Like, everyone likes Joe Milton and he's a really good dude. It seems like Malik Murphy really well liked and
along well with others.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was just really classy about how he handled the Texas thing and was really upset that he had to enter because of what the college football calendar was like, that, like, that sucked for him, that he had to start thinking about his next team because of, you know, just the circumstances with the college football calendar being crazy while his team's going to the college football playoff. But all that to say, like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of boom or bust potential with Malik Murphy at Duke. And I think Duke's just a hard place to be an elite quarterback. And we'll see if he's developed well and it works out. But like, what does Duke need him to be? Duke was 112th in passing offense last year. I think he can be better than that. I think Duke can be more fun on that side of the ball with Malik Murphy than what we saw a season ago. I think he can be better than Riley Leonard. So I'm going to say he's a needle mover because I think he will be better than what we saw from Riley Leonard. I think Riley Leonard was a little bit overrated during his Duke tenure, and I think Malik Murphy has an opportunity to be better.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't want to put a Joe Milton, a polarizing label like that on him at any point yet. Like, he's only been in college for like a year, right? So
yeah,
we're a long way away from that.
I think no, he's been longer. I think it's two or three now. Malik was like,
well, I think 2023 is the only year he put up any stats. He's honestly more like me to like more like Brock Vandegrift in terms of like, yeah, big time recruit. We really have no idea what he is. Other than we have like two starts of his Vandegrift, we have like absolutely nothing to go on. So we did get a little bit, like, he wasn't great against Kansas State. He was fine. I think the biggest thing, like, you can probably kind of, you know, and true freshman quarterbacks are not all built the same. So, you know, it doesn't always mean the same thing, but, you know, Arch Manning is one of the more hyped quarterback recruits coming out in several years. And it wasn't even a discussion about him being second string. So Malik Murphy clearly had the step up on him in the depth chart. And I feel like that's kind of one of the few things you can kind of hang your hat on. Like, well, hey, he did hold off this big time five-star recruit from being the backup a year ago.
Yeah. And I mean, remember, like, Joe was really good in the Clemson game, and Joe has shown flashes, like, and that was the whole thing, is like, there are flashes where you don't know, like, there's just a mystery box feel where they have the tools, and with the right coaching, this, that, and the other, then you can see it work out. And then, like, everything's like, all these coaches are taking these calculated gambles here, because, like, we talked about Notre Dame, where Sam Hartman was a calculated gamble last year by Marcus Freeman, because he's like, hey, he ran a lot of mesh stuff. We're going to run different stuff in our style with Gerard Parker. We're going to do a lot more pro style stuff. We're going to put Sam Hartman under center. It's going to be a different thing. And we're going to just bank on him being an older quarterback who has had a lot of success. And he's going to be able to adapt. He's going to be able to figure it out. And we're going to be able to coach him up. And he's going to be able to. And he was okay. It was mixed results. But sometimes you bring in somebody like Hendon Hooker, who was not part of the plan. You know, he's a Pruitt guy at the end of there. And he turns out that he was the perfect quarterback for Josh Heupel's system. It's just such a roll of the dice here, and I think Blake Murphy is an ultimate roll of the dice by Duke, but a worthwhile one, because it's just hard, man. These quarterbacks, there's a reason they're bouncing around. It's a reason that they get guys hired and fired and extended, depending on how these things go. But I think if you're a Duke fan, I think you're excited about what Malik Murphy can ultimately be going into this year.
There's also, I feel like there's like one like huge caveat for like every transfer quarterback. And it's if the place he's transferring from has a really, really good quarterback, then we don't necessarily know, like, this guy could be really good. He's just not as good as the guy that's starting. Like when Joe Burrow is transferring and the guy you got is throwing 50 touchdowns, like that must mean the guy that transferred is also could also be pretty good. So when a guy like Malik Murphy's transferring, it's like he's only not playing because he's playing behind one of the two or three best quarterbacks in college football. And so that's another thing you can kind of throw in there with Vandegrift. Like he's not as good as the guy who we think is the best quarterback in college football going into 2024. There is a potential that he is still damn good in his own right.
I don't disagree. Final
your
one
last
here.
One going from the G5 to the Big 12. We got
do you have something on this? I'm excited. Did you do some homework? Because I'm ready to talk about Daquan Finn.
I did a little bit of homework. Obviously, this guy's got some, is a dual threat. And the biggest thing that stands out to me, Daquan Finn, I'll let you, you probably have more to say about him, is the team success. I think that goes a long way. Like, he's obviously he's in the MAC, but this is a team that won the MAC in 2022 and lost in the conference championship in 2023. So to go with his good stats, he's also affecting winning. And I think that goes a long way. You're going somewhere like Baylor and the Big 12 is kind of wide open.
It's also just a gigantic year for Dave Aranda. I think he has to win to keep his job. You obviously bring in what Jake Spavadal as the new OC. So they're going back to more of that fun and gun, just Texas style, which again, like part of me, I think, I don't know if you agree with this, Matt Green, but like, so when you keep up with high school recruiting and like what a lot of teams are running, like I think some coaches just make it way too hard on themselves where I'm like, if you're a Texas college, you should be running like you should be running some version of the air raid, or unless you're Texas where you could actually get the kind of quarterbacks and get
why
the kind of
Texas specifically.
That's what Texas quarterbacks are running. Like you watch the Texas
just high schools.
High
schoolers are doing.
Yeah. Like that's what they're all doing. They're putting up bonker stats. If you look at like across the country, how many quarterbacks right now are from the state of Texas and played high school football, they played up these crazy offenses. They're always in the gun. It's just a lot of just offense, speed, tempo.
Yeah, that's not new either. There's been Texas quarterbacks everywhere for a while.
Right. But I just think they make it hard on themselves where I'm like, why are y'all, what are y'all doing? Like, just stick to what they know. Like, just build off that, you know, don't make it, don't put them in schemes and systems that they're not. So when some teams bring in Texas quarterbacks and stuff like that, I'm always just like, what are you doing? Like, just, he was really good at this other thing. Just have him do that. And he'll probably win you some games. Like, I think this is going to be really fun. All that to say, the style that Baylor was running before the last couple of years, it was more of like, I think some zone read and or like that zone scheme and that blocking scheme and all that. And I don't think the outside zone, and I just don't think that was ever going to really work at Baylor. And what was the best years of Baylor? The Brile system, obviously, was just that like, you're not going to have the talent that Texas is going to have ever. The reason Texas Tech has those blips with Patrick Mahomes and company with Michael Crabtree and Graham Harrell, this Cliff Kingsbury, it's like you have a different kind of scheme that is a pain in the butt, but it's also just really fun offensive. And you can win a lot of games that way when you don't have the guys, but you do have the quarterback play that can get you there who play that style. So when you look at Baylor now, I'm like, yeah, this is good. Dave Aranda, he's kind of pivoting here a little bit. Like you're bringing in a fun quarterback in Daquan Finn, who I think is electric. He had two starts against Power Five teams last year. He completed 55% of his passes, 528 yards total, six TDs, two interceptions. He was good. He was good in the Ohio State game. He had a couple of good plays there. I mean, like you said, he was sneaky, really, really good on a great Toledo team. Toledo was actually 30th nationally in scoring offense, competing with a lot of the big dogs. And I wonder too, do you think Ohio State, because he was in their backyard, is going to end up regretting not just turning their attention to the in-state guy and Daquan Finn, and like, how do we let him get away? Like, he has like this all-time great year at Baylor and he shows out and you're like, look, yeah, Will Howard's steady Eddie, but like Daquan Finn would have been a lot of fun, and he was right down the street, and we watched him play really good football in our building last year.
I mean, they also dropped like a 70 spot on Toledo, I think.
That's not his fault. Daquan Finn was on offense.
I mean, maybe. Is he Ohio State good? I don't know if he's that good, but I mean, he's a good player. Will Howard, I think, could still be, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in college football next year. But, you know, we'll see. I think sometimes teams have like a, you know, the pride gets in the way. It's like, we're Ohio State. We're the big dog in the state. We can't be getting our players from Toledo. Like, we don't need anyone that Toledo's got. Toledo takes the guys we don't want. So, I don't know. Maybe Ohio State's ego got in the way.
Maybe. But I'm excited. I think Daquan Finn is someone to just go ahead and pencil in. I think it was a good move. It's going to be a fun scheme. Baylor has not been really fun. They've been more ground and pound and more physical with the defensive minded Dave Aranda coming in here. But I think you're going to see a lot more fun Baylor football this fall. I'm excited to watch Daquan Finn. I think I'm going to buy that he's a needle mover and he ends up keeping Dave Aranda around a little bit longer.
So is that the moving the needle definition for Daquan Finn? He allows Aranda to keep his job. If Aranda's around in 2025, he moved the needle.
I think so.
That might be where it is with Baylor.
Well, that was fun, Matt Green. Up the 10, who do you think is ultimately the biggest needle mover after this year? Clairvoyant Matt Green, what would you say when we come back and do this list, let's say in February of next year? Who do you think will end up being the biggest needle mover?
Ooh, it's tough.
Who are you most confident in?
The definition we were talking, like, man, I feel like Oregon's got some national title like potential, like some Final Four potential, and that kind of would be by definition moving the needle for them. But give me Aiden Chiles. I think I think he could move the needle, and I don't know if Michigan State's probably not winning anything, but I'm big on this Jonathan Smith, knowing what he's got and bringing his luggage with him, bringing Louie the luggage with him, as Dion would say. So we'll see. I think he's got some star potential for sure. What are you saying?
I'm sticking with Cam Ward. I think it's gonna be Cam Ward. I think Miami's a playoff team.
That's probably the obvious answer. You went with the low hanging fruit. That's cool if you want to go with the easy.
Wow.
No,
and then I'll throw in the favorite though. I'll throw in Daquan Finn as the cool, not off the beaten path here, big needle mover.
Yeah, I would. I think maybe the other cop out answer might be Will Howard, because Ohio State's also right there with Oregon. Like they have legit national championship potential, and if he's the guy that gets it done, build the statue. I'm just joking. Don't build a statue, but it'll be big time if that'll be the first national title in a decade, basically.
I love it. Well, there you go, Matt Green. Do you have an idea for next week? What should we do as a theme for next week's show? Do you have one?
Oh man, I don't know. Put me on the spot there, man. Let's come up with another list. People love the lists, right?
They do love the list. People love the list. Well, Matt Green, thank you as always, my friend. And I will talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius, only you could find... Oh! There it is. Drawing board or
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.